fun.
Just pick one. All right. What is up, guys? It is another episode of the hashtag Sweat Local CLT podcast. I'm Stu.
I'm Isaac.
And we have Christian Bousquet, or Bousquet. Bousquet, if you're really French. And Christian is here. She's a member of ours at the gym. And mainly, the thing we were super interested of is you have pink hair, which is awesome.
Yeah. Right?
We're really into that.
Makes sense.
You're in the really bright colors.
Yeah.
I love it. And you have, your story is really interesting to where you are now self-employed. You are what would be referred to with, unfortunately, a bad taboo. It's, I feel like when you say influencer, it's a bad taboo.
It is.
But your story, and I want to just, I'm gonna do a quick summary because I want to see how good of, how well I did my research on this.
Okay. Let's see it.
Originally from Massachusetts.
Yes.
You have two Boston Terriers. You live with your boyfriend. Yeah. Okay.
Are they fiance
this now. You. There we go. Are they Boston Terriers because you're from Boston or like the Boston area, like Massachusetts throwback?
That
or?
Was not done intentionally, but I guess it works.
Fair enough. Okay. You originally you had kind of like a photography, makeup kind of scenario business. You exited that around 2019. Yes. Simultaneously, you went ahead and kicked off, you know, your social mate.
Yes.
Very clever, punny. Very punny. Punny as fuck. Social mate. And you've also done some digital stuff. You've done digital copy for some bigger brands, Brit & Co. and some other stuff like that. But in 2019 is really kind of when you said, if I'm kind of going in on this. And then 2020 was social mate.
Right.
Of. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. You
only
really
like half of that is on the internet. So how did you learn that?
Have you been in my house?
Right.
Isaac literally always is like, did you prepare for the interview? Did you do this? Like, do you even know? Who, like, you know, she goes to the gym, right? Like, she always is giving me a hard time. So I make sure to just rub her fucking face in whenever we get
that
on the podcast.
That was good.
Yeah. I think you did great. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
You don't even need me here.
Yeah. Well, so that's the hardest part of these because the guts of the conversation, the coolest part probably of this whole thing will be the other stuff we get into, but that's the hardest part because you get a guest on and you're like, hey, tell us your backstory. Yeah. And then you're like, all right, here's 15 minutes.
Exactly.
That, so I just try to wrap it up. Right. Is there anything pertinent in there that I missed? Like legit? I mean,
no.
Feel free to add.
I mean, that was pretty much spot on.
Yeah. Cool.
So,
well, awesome. So here's my question. You decide to do this and there's a lot of, the second you decide to go influencer, go that route, like what was the, in your head? We're like, okay, like, who did you see? Everyone's got some. Like, I grew up, I idolized Gold's Gyms. And, like, I grew up in the fitness scene. Like, I wanted to do that. For you, who did you look like? Who's your person? Like, holy fuck. It looks like they got a legit thing going on online. I want to do something like that.
It's really interesting because I actually don't think I have an answer to that question. I got into the industry when it was hardly even an industry. So like I've been working in the influencer industry before influencers were a thing. It was bloggers.
Yeah.
So I used
to... Which meant you were unemployed and your parents were disappointed in you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They just called them bloggers.
Yeah.
So back in 2013, maybe when I was in college, I worked with a company called Stylecaster who I actually still do a lot of writing for now. But they basically were just starting to bring bloggers into their digital platform, like showing how they style clothes and things like that. So I, working there, had just kind of started getting into it a little bit more. And I was like, this is cool. There were so many people. I don't even remember who they were now, but like just people who were doing that whole blogger thing that no one else was really doing. And so I was like, I could do this. It seems easy enough. And so that was back in 2013, 2014. And that's kind of when I started dipping my toes in.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess I didn't really do anything seriously until maybe 2018. But I really can't think of anyone specific that I was like, oh my gosh, that's my person. But
yeah.
It was just that first wave of bloggers that I was like, this is cool.
Which is, I mean, and blogging, even in 2013, blogging was there. But I remember in like 2000, I was in college in 2007, and I would read Mark Sisson's The Daily Apple. Now, if anyone's ever had a Primal Kitchen condiment product, Primal Kitchen, you see the grocery store. Mark Sisson owns Primal Kitchen. Ah. He wrote a book, or he wrote a daily blog called Mark Sisson's Daily Apple. And it was about how he was eating a paleo-based diet. He was exercising. He was doing this functional fitness thing. So it was kind of in the realm of the shit I followed. And I'm like, a blog? Well, that's weird. Like, I don't like to read. Like, I'm in college. I read enough. But it was the one thing I read every day because we're just on this super hyper topic and he was a normal fucking dude.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the cool appeals of bloggers is it's not a Vanity Fair article.
Right.
It is just some regular person's take on life. So, but yeah, so even like 2013, blogging is still a thing. It's a much more, it's more of a respected thing at that point.
Yeah.
And how did you parlay that into what you have now?
So back at that point, I was kind of dipping my toes into photography. My mom had like a crappy little camera, and I would take my friends into the backyard and like, you know, do their makeup and make them wear something crazy and take pictures of them. And it honestly, it just kind of caught on. People started asking me to take photos and things like that. So I actually had a really successful photography business from probably 2014 to 2016. And that's when I transitioned into my other business, which we can get into after. But at that point it was cool because I was taking pictures of other people and it was easy money for me. I loved doing it.
Did you have an Instagram account? It was like you were all in the social media at this
point? So this was just my business. I didn't have like a personal one. I just called it Busquet Photography. Super original.
Mm-hmm. It's pronounced Busquet.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, so I did have an Instagram, but again, Instagram at that point was like,
yeah,
not at all close to what it is today. And eventually I got sick of taking pictures of other people because I was doing a lot of high school seniors. I would deal with the moms and like, it was just a nightmare. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to work for, I still was really working for someone else. And so that's when I was like, you know what? Hey mom, can you take a couple pictures of me? And you know, she like took some crappy pictures of me in some ugly outfits. And then, eventually I started just posting them on like Blogger and eventually transitioned into Instagram. And honestly, I've been doing it since then. It's just transformed into what it is today.
When you think of your previous content, when you kind of started blogging and your original, what was like, cause that's the thing, like to post a photo and you see this, like you can't go to Optimist Hall without three photo shoots happening for someone's personal Instagram. But what is the copy? Like, what is the context? Like, what is the thing that you happen to know something about that you have a hot take on all the time? Like, what was the thing you would write about as a blogger or when you start with was it photography?
So, no, it actually wasn't. I had gone to college in New York at the Fashion Institute of Technology, so I was really into fashion. So I would post, like, you know, here's what I wore, here's where I bought it all, and I was really big into fashion. But in the last few years, I transitioned quite a bit into more, like, photography, business, Instagram, because what I realized was that there's so many people doing fashion, and I was, like, you know, kind of getting lost in the mix. And so I had to ask myself, like, what sets me apart that I could still incorporate fashion into. And what I realized was that I was young and had a really successful business and people wanted to know how I did it. And I started posting more about that. And that's when people were just like, I was getting a really good response. So I was like, I'm gonna take this and I'm gonna run with it. And I did that for a few years and that's when I really, really grew. And at that time, so many people were trying to also grow their small businesses, growing their Instagrams. And I had done so much work in that whole area that I already knew so much about it. So I grew a lot during that time. And then late last year, I realized I was getting so many questions. I would get DMs all day long. How do I do this? How do I do this? I would spend so much time responding to DMs for free that I was just like, I am literally doing free work all day. It hit me one day. And so that's when we started SocialMe. I was like, okay, well, you know, I need to start getting paid for all this time that I'm putting into coaching other people. And then I was like, okay, I guess I'm an Instagram coach. That's what I do now.
There it is.
And it has just taken off since then. It's been awesome. I love my job. I literally just get to help people all day long and I get to do it like at home in my pajamas.
Yeah.
Instagram coaching, social media coaching is really unique because, okay, so like coaching in here, I can coach you in fitness in here, but I'm 100% control as to the fitness that's happening. Thing, obviously, what you are subject to any changes that come down the pipeline. What's his fucking face at Instagram just made that huge announcement recently.
Adam.
So he makes that announcement. We're no longer a photo sharing app, and he alludes to a few different things, and maybe they're going to bring in the discoveries or recommendations.
Yes.
But it's constantly like this pivoting thing that you know, if something drops today, like an update to the system, the algorithm that is completely foreign from what it currently is, you're just at the same point as the rest of those clients. You've got to bust your ass to figure out how to use it. Would you say, because my other job is of business consulting for gyms, a lot of the questions I have to answer on a daily basis are the same 40-ish kind of questions on a regular basis, because it gets people from zero to, let's call it, 50 or 60% of what they need to know. That's the majority of the knowledge needed.
Right.
How much of your coaching on Instagram is like real advanced high level strategy versus like this is the aspect ratio for your thumbnail for blank, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, I definitely I work with a lot of people who are beginners, but I also have a lot of my students who have been in the game for a really long time. So I really, that's why I like the one-on-one coaching, because every person I talk to, I do one-on-one work with them because I know so many people are at different levels. So a lot of my beginners, I do have to teach, like, you know, oh, it's got to be a one-by-one, yeah, you know, and I'm fine doing that. But I do have a lot of people too who I have to, you know, they're doing everything right, but then at the end of the day, for some reason, something is still not working. So that's where it gets really advanced, and we have to, like, really do a deep dive and talk about strategy. Honestly, I would say it's probably like 50-50, the more advanced yeah. people and the beginners.
And you, like, created like a mentorship program, right? Where it's like, yes. Because I mean, and this would reminded me of used to with the Micro Gym University, where it's like you found yourself answering the same questions yeah. over and over again, that it's just like, I'm going to put this program out and then we're going to have conversations.
Right.
So that we're not wasting our time talking yeah. about some of this stuff, right?
Usually, yeah. I mean, at first, when I first started the business, what I would do is I had like presentations made, and I would have everyone would book like 4 calls, and it was all included in my pricing. And I was saying the same presentation over and over again for every call. And I was like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. What am I doing? So I recorded all of them, and now they just go watch the videos. And then our call is like specifically to just answer questions, talk about things more in depth. And it works so much better that way. But yeah. I definitely do have so many of the same questions that now, thankfully, all have a place where they're answered.
Yeah. Do you, how high is the compliance on that? Because I'll use something very similar. Like, I'll start with a client, and I do everything would be in person, because that's mm-hmm. where the highest dollar amount for my time is right. going to be with an in-person thing. Like, cool, watch these 2 courses, 3 courses at MGU. That way, when we get on the first call, I'm not having to explain to you what 2 + 2 is. And then they get on the call, right. and I'm still sometimes, most often, having to explain what 2 + 2 is, because people and humans are fucking shitty listeners. That's the bottom line. They're just not good yeah. listeners all the time. They yeah. don't follow instructions.
I would agree with that. I will say I've actually been really lucky. Maybe it's the way I've like laid things out, but I'm like very strict. And like, if I put in capital letters in my emails, if you have not watched the videos, we are rescheduling your call.
Yeah, that's like, great.
Same thing. I don't want to go over the same things. And it's just doing them a disservice too, because if they just had watched all that videos, they could have used that time that we talked on the phone answering the same things to answer other questions that they have. So thankfully I've been lucky, but it definitely does happen where I'm just like, okay, you haven't watched your video, we're just rescheduling, talk yeah. to you in a week.
I used to think, in order before they booked their first call, I was going to take the videos I wanted them to watch, and then somewhere probably like 3/4 of the way through, plug the link. So you can only book that call if you watch the video. And that's I wouldn't say tricky. Where it was. And I'd be like, well, they're like, where's the link? I'm like, did you watch the
go
video?
Find it,
and right? they're like, yeah, yeah, I watched them. Like, bullshit, because you know where the link was.
Yeah.
I was
it's
like,
sneaky.
Yeah.
I can be a little sneaky with it too. I use this platform called Kajabi.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
I love it. And it's cool because I can see where everyone is
the
in all
progress
the videos.
Of the course.
Yeah. So yeah. if I see someone hasn't started their second one, I'm just like, well, I see you didn't start your second video, yeah. so it looks like we're gonna have to reschedule that's, for tomorrow. Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, Kajabi does that, so I use Thinkrific and Teachery. Similar concepts.
I looked into both of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah, learning service mod, like that whole genre of SaaS products is so great. I love Kajabi stuff. One thing that I think is really interesting, this is the idea of the infopreneur. So the infopreneur is essentially what you yeah. are in that realm and what I do with the business consulting. And it's not new. Like, they used to fill up ballrooms at Marriott's where some dude would get up there yep. with all his DVDs and he'd say, I know how to do this thing, and sales training. He would sell the DVDs, and that's the same exact thing we're doing today. Yes. It's just way, way, way faster.
Yes.
When you look at the speed at which more of the infopreneurs entering the market, so it's becoming more saturated, you obviously, like, you have, like, what? Don't take this the wrong way, you've got, like, the Tekashi 6ix9ine effect. You stand out in a picture. People look at you, and have you ever seen Supervillain, the documentary on Tekashi 6ix9ine?
No.
It's incredible. No. As a marketer, it doesn't matter about whether you like Tekashi 6ix9ine. Yeah. It's literally a breakdown and analysis as to how he crafted the career and the reputation he did based on looks and actions and how they deviated from anything that's ever been seen in the hip hop industry. It's a marketer's documentary.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. Look into it. But it's that concept of that. If I'm looking through all the Instagram, whatever people who are coaching, you will stand out simply due to an aesthetic effect.
Yeah.
Like my hair, whatever, my cool, loud clothes, like that peacocking, whatever you want to call it, it stops the thumb scroll.
Right.
How do you find yourself having to differentiate or cut through the noise as more people enter the marketplace?
Yeah, there definitely are. I mean, people who do exactly what I do, now there are so many of them. What I find, I mean, I definitely think the pink hair and everything in the loud clothes, that definitely sets me apart for sure. But I think one thing that also sets me apart for sure is like not a lot of other infopreneurs or coaches, whatever, are as like personable, I guess, or they don't spend as much like one-on-one time. Like I really like to take home the point of I'm going to literally walk through everything hand in hand. If you have a question, it's 9 o'clock at night, send me a DM, send me a text, whatever it is. Like, and not a lot of coaches do that. And I take on like a certain amount of people, small amount of people at once, so I can do that. Mm-hmm. But I think so many coaches out there are like almost a little bit too serious, and they don't feel like normal human beings. So it's harder for, you know, a potential student to say, yeah, I want to go hang out with them for 4 months and learn from them if they don't really feel comfortable. So that's always my first step, is taking that time to just make people feel, you know, like they're my friend and like they're just hanging out with me. And that definitely makes a big difference.
I feel like I come off as like a super fan, but I've noticed on your page.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But like one thing that I think that does make you stand out is that you have your page, Kristen's page, and then you have your social media.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, you provide the content on your own page as well. And like, I don't think I've even honestly clicked over to your social mate. Sorry.
There's a lot on page. There. Yeah. Gotta get on there.
I will. But with the, but what you do is like, you're showing your personal life. You show your hobbies, exactly. You show who you are, but then you are also sprinkling in the information and the business all at the same time. So yeah, I think it's definitely more like, oh, I know Kristen. I'm going to, like, they probably don't know Kristen, but feel like they do.
He knew Kristen.
Right. Yeah. Very well. Crazy. That they feel like they want to work with you because of that. And you're very like, your Kristen page is influencer.
Right.
And, but then you're very upfront, which I think is very cool, of like, when you make a post with a product, like a sponsored one, you literally make a story of just like, hey, if you want me to continue putting my fun shit out there, interact with my sponsored ad so that I can keep doing this.
Yeah.
And like, I think that transparency and like just combining of who I am with that really helps.
It's so, you and I'm assuming you probably have never you've never had to run a paid ad.
No.
Correct. Yeah. Same with mine. And a lot of people ask like, why make 700 YouTube videos? Why make thousands of reels? Why do any of that? And like, do you get paid for that? It's in trying to explain to someone there's indirect monetization, right? Like, you know, the podcast, it had the majority of the pre-roll ads and mid-roll ads for my podcast are for my shit. Like, you know, like that's how that works.
Yeah.
So the content creates the awareness, creates, like you were saying, Isaac, creates the, oh, I know their style. I like that vibe. I like your take on that. And then eventually you make enough small pitches along the way and it lands. For you and how you look at, like, without getting into like the price points and all that stuff, what are the ways, we talk about the brand deals and all that, that you were able to go from zero brand deals and monetization direct, because now that's direct monetization. Right. And these are mainly through affiliate links and things like that, or
I actually don't really do much affiliate links. I do mostly like sponsored content with brands. So it's mostly like a flat fee kind of thing.
So walk me through that process for anyone listening who's like, how the fuck do they make money? I don't get it. So there's the indirect, which is, we just talked about. Now talk to me about the direct monetization.
I mean, and this is the biggest question I probably get, and I think why people come to my program, is I am very transparent about it. One thing that I found, like with the whole influencer industry, it's very new, so people are very confused by it. They don't know how I make money, and they don't know how much money or how, you know, any of the details, and it's really hard to just go Google it, which is why I try and put out a lot of content about it. So, what I find, I lost my train of thought.
Because the main question was, talk to me now about how you went from
direct
zero to now direct monetization.
Thank you. Lost my train of thought.
You're good.
So back in maybe 2018, when I first started actually taking it seriously, I was making like no money. So I was putting all this time into it. I didn't have a coaching program, didn't have any brand deals or anything. So I think there is definitely a period for anyone who's just starting of like hustle and not making any money. And then eventually what happened was I started having brands who were like, oh, well, like we can gift you $200 in store credit for this post. And at first I was like, damn, okay, like this is a great deal, sweet. And I didn't really realize, you know, how much work was going to go into it, how I was not actually getting paid, but I got free clothes, which was cool, but that didn't pay my bills. So eventually, and I think the industry, I got in at a good time because I kind of progressed with it, where like that's when people started actually charging money and things like that. So what happens now is basically I will either pitch to a brand or a brand will pitch to me and basically say, hey, you know, we found your Instagram. We really love your vibe. And we are this kind of product. We think you'd be a really good fit. Your audience would love it. So basically at that point, I'll ask them like, okay, well, what are you looking for? Do you want in-feed posts? Do you want Instagram stories? Do you want just content that you can go post and I don't post? But basically we just kind of figure out the deliverables. And then at that point I have rates set and I'll say, okay, for an Instagram post, it's this much money. In stories, it's this much money, whatever it is. And we just negotiate from there.
How much trial and error did it take for you to land on your current rates? Because my guess is you probably undervalued the shit out of them in the beginning.
Crazy. And this is what I noticed with my mentorship students, it's insane. Like, you know, there will be someone who is charging $100 and she should be charging $500. And I tell these girls this and they're just like, no way, no way. Like, that can't be real. And I'm like, no, seriously, try it next time. It'll work. And that's, I mean, probably the most rewarding part of my job is I've been able to help other women just be like, no, you're worth this. Like, you should ask for it and you'll get it. I definitely had to go through quite a bit of trial and error. I remember the moment when I found out how hardcore I was undervaluing myself. I had a friend of mine. She lives out in California. She does the same thing I do. We have very similar photos, very similar. She has yellow hair. I have pink hair. So like very, very similar people. And we're on the same campaign because most of the time, like, brands will have a certain product that they're pushing and they'll reach out to a bunch of people. What I find a lot is that it's actually always in like the same little community. So I had talked to her, hey, I saw you were on this campaign too. Like, out of curiosity, what'd you charge them? And she was like, oh, I charged them $500 and I charged them like $200. And we had the exact same amount of followers, everything. And I was like, no way, you're kidding me. So then I just started charging $500 and then I was like, okay, cool, this is working. And then I, you know, sometimes I would just like push it a little bit and I'd be like, let me try 700 and see what happens. And then they'd take it. And I'd be like, cool, $700 is my new rate.
Yeah.
And so every time that's happened so far, like I'll always push a little bit higher than my last rate. And then if it sticks, it sticks. If not, I'll negotiate down. But it's just a lot of trial and error. I mean, I'm still doing trial and error now.
So I've seen probably more than I should breakdowns of guys trying to create exact equations. So take the amount of impressions, multiply it by followers, subtract the amount of fucking fingers you have, like whatever it may be. And trying to come up with an equation for it. Yeah. And when I look at like the podcasting world, which I'm real heavy in, the monetization there is still radio and TV based. It's CPMs, right? Cost per 1,000 impressions. And that's just such an old school way of doing it. Yep. And until a better way of podcasting monetization and that kind of thing arises, I don't see that changing. But in your world, in sponsored Instagram posts, there is so many different variables to look at. How many people saved it versus how many people engaged and commented versus how many people forwarded it.
Yep.
Versus, like, and so when you batch your stats, like it's, let's say I'm brand X and you're trying to, you know, hey, listen, I'd like to work with brand X. Here's my price. And I'm like, cool. But what is my ROI going to be? How do you handle that part of the negotiation?
It's tough. A lot of the times I don't have a lot of information about the ROI because typically like I'll just do my job and then they don't really give me the results. A lot of times I do ask, but most brands don't really give me the information. So a lot of the times I just base it on like, look, here's my engagement. You know, if I am posting something, this is the engagement we're typically going to see. I have examples of like swipe ups and I can tell you how many people went to the website. It's hard to tell you exactly how many people purchased though. But aside from like likes, comments, saves, shares, all of that stuff, even in like brand contracts, there's so many variables even there. So like a lot of times brands will ask for exclusivity. So like, okay, we're Neutrogena. You can't work with Maybelline for 6 months. So then if Maybelline wants to pay me $1 million next month, I have to say no. So that's something I'll raise my rate for. Or usage is a big one. So a lot of brands will be like, hey, we want to boost your posts or put them in a billboard, whatever it is. Like anytime they want to use them for advertising, that's another thing I'll charge more for.
Do you essentially have to forfeit the IP at that point and give it to them? So, do they own it, or they're like licensing it from you at that
point? So they do. It's different with every situation. Like, some contracts will be, okay, we want usage for 6 months, and some are like, no, this is ours now. A lot of times when I do just content creation, so it's not something I have to post, they just want me to go shoot the stuff. I love that situation because then I don't have to post it. It's really nice. Like, then people don't feel like they're getting, you know, throwing out ads. But in those situations, usually they're like, you're signing over the rights to us.
What do you see? Like, do you try to, because again, you don't want to be coming in for the ask on every post. So
yes.
What kind of gamut do you try to run a ratio of non-ask, 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 ask?
Yeah. It's a tough balance because obviously as influencers, typically we make the majority of our money with those sponsored posts. So typically I usually try and sprinkle in 2 a week, and I usually post 5 times a week. So sometimes I'll post a little bit more so that I can post a third one, but I usually try and just do 2 per week. It's hard though. I feel like you have to have those sponsored posts but you have to formulate them in a way that is very organic. And so I'm not posting something that's just like, hey, this is really awesome, you need to buy it. I try and, like, you know, tell a personal story, talk about how I actually use it in my daily life, or show people how I use it so that people don't think I'm just like, buy this, make me money.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the best ones are, so just like local guy, Aaron Dodge.
Oh, Aaron's a good friend of mine. Yeah.
Dodge is the man. So he wanted to do a brand deal with Disco. Disco's the men's.
Yes, I remember this.
So he went to a mutual friend of ours, Joe Tibaldi, and they were just throwing around ideas. He works out of Joe's office and was just...
That's right.
Yeah. And they came up with, because Disco, and I'm literally, Aaron influenced me to buy this shit. It's a face mask.
Yes.
So you put a face mask on and it's a 20-minute or 10, 15-minute long face mask. So the podcast is Joe and Aaron, both with the face masks on, and the podcast is just as long as it is for the mask to be on.
Perfect.
And it was just such a cool idea. And I've seen the one he did because he's a huge gluten-free kid, and like when they did gluten-free Oreos and he was running around Charlotte.
Yeah, that was
like
very cute.
Some really cool, awesome stuff. But that's also like, when you do those kind of things and you're actually thinking of the creative director
exactly.
then for the ad, like, you need to charge a ton for that.
That's the thing that's the hardest part of justifying my rates is like, people are like, well, you're just taking a picture. And I'm like, there's so much more that goes into it than that. And I think that's like with the whole stigma behind influencers, it's so hard to explain to anyone what I do. I usually am just like, I work in social media. Because first of all, I don't want them to be like, oh, an influencer? What does she just like play with makeup all day? Like, you know, like what else do people think we do? They don't realize how much goes into it. And it's so frustrating because the people who are on the outside have no clue. And it's, you know, we get such a bad rep for it. But, you know, what are you going to do?
You got some?
Yeah.
I don't know if I want you to ask it yet.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What?
Is that my question? And now I'm going to forget it. You go.
It's hard to interrupt him sometimes. My question is like, so now you are recently engaged.
Yes.
So congrats on that.
Thank you.
But like, how much now is that stuff going to go in, like the influencer stuff and your personal life start to like mesh? And how does that like become difficult? Like, is that like, man, I wish I could just plan my wedding and not have to deal with this shit, but I know that this is like a really good opportunity? Or is it like the other way around?
That's a good question. Honestly, I think after doing this for so many years, I am so used to sharing. That's why I said I have no secrets. Like, she was saying before that if I say anything I shouldn't say.
Okay.
I was like, I don't think I have any secrets. Honestly, it's at first it was very weird to be like so open about everything, but the more I got just like positive responses from people being like, thank you for being so open, so transparent, I'm just like, cool, I'll share anything. I don't, you know, it doesn't really bother me anymore. But I actually really like that whole process of sharing things like that with my audience because they give me really good ideas.
Yeah.
They're like, here's how you can do it for half the price. I'm like, these are my people.
I guess I just mean like, are you gonna like, is it, yeah, I'm gonna work with this venue because they know that I'm an influencer and they're gonna help me and bring the price down.
Yeah.
But I really wish that I could go over there. Like, how much does that go into like your life decision making?
Not very often, honestly. Yeah. Usually the way I try and do all those kind of partnerships is like, if I find something and really love it, then I'll reach out and be like, hey,
yeah, yeah. Up? Yeah, right.
Actually with the ring, we had gone to Diamonds Direct and just shopping as normal people. And, I was like, I love it here. I have so many things that I want to try on. Like I loved everything. So I literally went home and I emailed their PR person. I found the email online and I just introduced myself. We got on a call and then we ended up doing a trade. So we actually got my ring pretty much for free. In exchange for posts, which is, and typically I don't work on like an exchange basis, but with something I'm going to spend money on anyways. Yeah. I was like, that cool, now I don't have to pay taxes on it.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. That one's worth it.
So it works out a lot of times, but it's typically where I'll start off first being like, okay, I really like this.
And then trying to reach out from there.
Right. If it works, it works.
I'm glad I let you ask that. That was a good question.
Too. Yeah,
your question. You've earned another one now.
Oh, I don't have any.
You don't have any more? I'm done. When you're starting off, someone's listening to this, and they have similar aspirations. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, do you believe a quantity or a quality play is your primary?
Like with posting?
Yes.
Quality.
Talk to me about
definitely.
That.
Definitely. What I have noticed is that if you post something and it doesn't have value, people don't care. And that's something I teach my students all the time. I'm just like, look, if you're going to post something, it has to either entertain, has to educate, it has to promote, or it has to inspire in some way. It has to hit one of those four categories, at least one. And if it doesn't, people are just going to be like, cool, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah.
Cool, like, done, bye. And typically, like, the point is to get people to be loyal to you so they always want to comment or like or share your stuff specifically because that's my girl, that's my friend, like I want to help her out. And that's why building that community, it takes so long and it's a lot of hard work. But if you can start off posting high quality stuff, people will start to see you, you know, as an expert sooner rather than later. And I think that's probably the best situation.
Yeah, it's that quality versus quantity is something that I battle with in advice and conversations, because there is a certain point where you just need to get some reps in. Like you need to get, like there's two scary buttons. Record is the first scary button, upload's the second one. And there is a certain amount of reps that need to get under your belt for you to kind of get over the hump of that. And I kind of like people shitting on their leg a few times in the beginning. It's really good for, like, I think it's really good. If you want this to be your career, you need to post a bunch of things that no one gives a fuck except for your mother, right? Like your mom's the only one who liked it. And you have to let that sit with you and be like, okay, I need to go back to the drawing board and change it. And the thing I generally see that adjust, it's not always like the quality, like the high end quality of the, because we all know now, like I'm a camera guy. Like I want to shoot everything in 4K. Yeah, I want to go to, Final Cut. I want to edit. But then I also realize that most people are consuming now. I mean, the phone is the camera. Like me carrying around a camera, I look like I had it this past weekend at this thing. I look like the old guy. Like everyone else just had phones, and I'm like, it looks my mom's cell phone in '94. Like, what is this fucking thing the old dude brought?
That's a really good point. Yeah. Honestly.
So like, it's like, oh my god, the quality. One of my favorite YouTubers, Peter McKinnon, just did an entire video on like, is the high quality mirrorless DSLR shoots and videos, are those going away and being replaced with, you know, your 1080 on your, you know, P on your iPhone? Is that a thing? But then I look at some of the productions that happen on a TikTok or on a reel, I'm like, yeah, that's still really fucking impressive. Like really impressive. So I always struggle with that quantity versus quality, but I guess I like quantity maybe in the beginning, just so you know what it's like for no one to give a shit about your
post.
Yeah,
that's not a bad point.
Yeah. You mentioned two things, really. You know, I always say something, it's got to be educational or entertaining, but the one thing is you also have to have a delivery style that someone can palate.
Yep.
A good friend of ours, his name is Zach Long. Back in 2000 and shit, this was 2011, he started the Barbell Physio. And the Barbell Physio is just, he's a physical therapist, and people who do group functional fitness who have like, shoulder pain, hip pain, he just started making videos. Now, I love Zach to death. I literally saw him today for my fucking torn calf, but he's got a very Monday. I mean, he's not the most entertaining guy in the world. Like he's not, but the dude back then still had 40,000. This is when Facebook was like 40,000 people had a Facebook page, and now it's an entire business.
Right.
But I was like, man, your delivery style, I couldn't, like, I look at that, I'm like, man, Zach, I fucking love you. I'll drink beers with you, but I want to listen to it. But there's a, even no matter what, your delivery style, even you're like, my voice sounds weird, or, I'm not that funny, or, I'm not that, there's a niche of an audience that'll resonate with that thing, with your style, if you're just persistent enough to break through and get through the first 100 posts in which nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah, well, that's what I think when you guys are talking about quality versus quantity. I think when we're saying quality, I'm saying, I think it's more of like, what are you actually saying?
Sure.
Yeah.
As opposed to the quality of the photo and the video. It's, yeah. Zach Long knows his shit. So him talking about that, as mundane as it sounds, yeah. like the people who are interested in that
yeah.
are going to listen.
And everyone in your line of work generally gets a professional photographer to go and take pictures of right. their thing. So it's like, okay, everyone's got some professional photography. So what do I do to break through that noise, right? What do I do to make that look, you know, or stand out differently? Because really good photos with great lighting and contour and everything is just not, it doesn't stand out. It doesn't
yeah.
shake it up.
Not anymore. Yeah.
It's, and that's, I think, why I dove into color so hard. I've always been like, I don't think I own anything black. And there are people who like only wear black. So, you know, that's something that definitely sets me apart. But I've found that when I do really play on color, it's, you know, when you're scrolling through a feed, again, it does stick out and people will stop to look at it. So I come from a photography background, so I have a really hard time with it as well. I'm just like, please, 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 let's not ever get rid of cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do, I will say I film all of my TikTok videos on my phone. I film all of my stories, my reels, everything on my phone. The only thing I bring out a camera for now is just like when we actually go out and shoot. But I can't imagine shooting that stuff with an iPhone. It yeah. just wouldn't be the same
yeah.
for me.
Yeah. And it's, you know, if you're, once you get good enough, like I take my camera, shoot it, throw it in my computer, get on Final Cut, and I can edit it real quick.
Same.
I probably, if I took the diligence and stopped acting like an old man, I probably could get on Reels and figure that out yeah. as well. But it's just like, it's like, where's your speed at and where's the opportunity cost lost?
Yeah.
You know, and learning the new thing. But at some point, the new thing always takes over. My grandfather, exactly. remember him saying, I don't need a website. I'm in the Yellow Pages.
Oh,
well, guess what, Grandpa? Sir. You done fucked up. Yo, sir, you done messed up. For you, let's get real tactics.
Yeah.
Reels, TikTok, obviously competing entities here. What's your belief? If I do you shoot it in a third party app like something like Splice and then upload the same video to each, or do you treat each platform as a different native communication device, and or do you cross post? Do you, if it's going on Reels, that same shit's going on TikTok?
That's typically the way that I do it. Yeah, I mean, my audience on TikTok is the same as it is on Instagram, because I like to try and get people from Instagram to go to TikTok and vice versa. So my content, I usually just will shoot it on my actual camera app and then I'll just edit it in a third party app and then I upload the same video to both yeah. of them.
So I've seen, like, I've my struggle with that, and because that's the most efficient use of your time. Like, by far the most efficient.
Exactly.
But I always think of, like, influencers. If we post the same thing on all the platforms, there's really no reason for me to migrate to another
exactly.
platform. Mm-hmm. But it's like on TikTok, since I can go 3 minutes on that, can that be my longer form content, blah, blah, blah? Reels is my hot takes. So, like, you have to go to different channels to see different shit. But, again, now we're talking, okay, I need about two assistants and two other people. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, it becomes a media company at that point.
Exactly, it does. And, again, that's where it's very underrated, the amount of work that goes into it. But I think with the 3 minute TikTok thing, like, I don't think anyone's really watching the full 3 minutes.
No. Yeah.
People want short, quick, I can watch it, scroll the next one, you know?
Yeah.
So I personally probably will never make a 3 minute video because I like the fact that I can like separate it and then have more content out there.
Yeah.
And that helps with time as well. But with Reels or with TikTok, what I find is that I actually, because TikTok's algorithm is a little bit different where they want quantity, like they want you to just push out videos all day. Like you're supposed to, I remember reading when I first started on TikTok last November, I think it was, that they want you to post 3 TikTok videos a day. And so I did it for a month and it was the most exhausting thing ever. But like they were so easy, you know, I would just film them like selfie style video. I wasn't like making any sort of production or anything. So I actually, now what kind of differentiates the two platforms is that I actually have a lot more content on my TikTok because I'm trying to push out a ton of videos there.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas like if I posted 3 times a day on Reels, people would hate me. So I can put a lot more content on TikTok. It's a lot more opportunity for those videos to get pushed out to people. So that's typically how I've been doing things.
Yeah, I've been working on this thesis, this like, because I'm a fan of long form content.
Okay.
Right. So one of the podcast segments I do is traveling and doing 3 hour long conversations, like a 3 camera setup. It's like I'm in all this production.
Yeah.
And then clipping have the 3 hour that lives on podcasts, and then I clip out into 30 plus small little clips to live out. But what you said there, just maybe like you were saying, like, I don't see anybody on TikTok fucking around with a 3-minute video. The only genre that I see is going to work, or the only one of those things you listed, four reasons or four things you have to do with your content, is got to be the education. Like, YouTube is a long format. Yes. Nobody puts captions on a YouTube video. No. Why? Because you go to YouTube with the 100 explicit reason of watching a thing, learning. Right. I want a gear review. Is this the right podcast equipment? Whatever. So it's like, though, like, that's the one genre I think can break through on IGTV, and I think a breakthrough on a 3-minute TikTok is if it's education based and I will stick around for the education so I can do the thing. But if it's entertainment, I'm like, the next video is probably just as funny. I don't need to see that. Yes. Like, it's a punch, like a comedian. If a comedian took, some do it great, but if it took them fucking real long to get to the punch, you lose them.
Exactly.
You got to have a quick punch. Like Andrew Schultz, like the king of like the fastest, he has like a joke every 22 seconds or something like that. And it's like hysterical, but it's the way he broke through on YouTube.
Right.
Who do you look at now in the influencer space or the content creation space? It could be on any platform that you take inspiration from, that you're like, they're doing good work. I love what they do. It could be like a really high-end celebrity. It could be a local person.
So there is actually, I can think of one person on, she's actually on all platforms. I found her on YouTube and she makes a ton of educational social media videos. And I am always Googling that kind of stuff because I want to obviously continue to learn. Her business is called Boss Babe, which I hate because it's so...
Dude, my kid watches Boss Baby, which is a show on Netflix, like Netflix Kid. Yeah. Boss Baby is a legit show.
I feel like they could have gotten a little bit more creative and like less basic with it. But okay. But she has a really, really, really successful business. And I mean, she busts out YouTube videos like multiple times a week. But she does a really, really good job of keeping me through the whole video. That's for sure. Because it's, again, very educational. I came to learn. I feel like actually going on your point, like if you ever go on YouTube and find like a 2-minute video, you're just like,
what the fuck? What's the point?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why am I going to watch
this? Exactly. It's so true.
Let me ask you, what kind of things is it? Is it transitions? Is it the integration of B-roll and tackle? What does she do to keep it? Or is she just really good at what I call like a Shakespearean act? She has character introduction, conflict and resolution, and she crushes that in the video.
That's definitely it. She's very good at like walking you through the problem, you know, talking about maybe how the problem makes you feel and then how you can fix the problem. Yeah. So she does a great job with just educating and taking you through the whole process so that you're like, yes, that's exactly what I'm feeling. Yes, teach me more, you know?
How much time do you dedicate? Because obviously when you have online courses on Kajabi or any of these learning service modules, you know, you spend all this time, you shoot the course, you make the content, you put it out, and then you're like, all right, I probably have to update that in about 6 months or so. And it's just like a recurring cycle of new stuff that you got to put out there. Simultaneously, you're worrying about new client acquisition, getting new clients on. You're also worried about the retention of your current clients. Yep. And you're also having to worry about the brand deals. Like when you think of your week as an influencer and you're thinking of, okay, I've got this pie chart of time. There's only 86,400 seconds in a day, and I need to splice up all that shit. How do you batch up those different areas of the business in a given week?
So I have a really, really good streamlined process now, but I will say that's probably the hardest thing in being successful is that if you don't have a good process, it's a very, very time-consuming, frustrating business to be in. So typically what I do is on Wednesdays, I sit down and I think of all my content ideas. Fridays or Saturdays, we usually go out and shoot everything. And I'm lucky because Andrew actually, he like half works for me. he's not like a full-time employee or anything.
I do pay him.
I felt bad asking him to dedicate all his time for free. So I was like, all right, we'll put a little in the joint bank account. So yeah, basically we buy groceries with it. Yeah, it's great. So we go out and shoot on Saturdays. I usually get everything planned over the weekend for Monday. And then I have all my posts ready to go for Monday through Friday. So that whole process actually doesn't take me that long now, again, because I like section off what I do each day. So it's not like a whole day or every day I have to like get my makeup on, take photos, plan my caption. Like it's just easier for me to batch it that way. And then with all the social media stuff, I usually book 2 calls a day. So that's 2 hours a day of calls. But then I also do discovery calls. So I usually do like a max of 3 of those. Those take 15, 20 minutes. And then the rest of my time is mostly just spent in my emails, you know, pitching to brands or negotiating back and forth, reading contracts. There's a lot of like logistics, I guess, that again, people don't really realize. Mm-hmm. Like, no one thinks an influencer goes through and, like, you know, is redlining contracts or anything, but that's pretty much what I do all day long. But again, I've gotten in a good process now where I feel like most days I can kind of like clock out around 3 o'clock and then I have time to like actually get off my phone for a little while, but then usually end up back on it at night because you really can't clock out for that long. It's hard.
Which is brings me to my next point. So the gym for me, the gym is a business. Right. I get hit by a car today. Isaac celebrates and, sure you know, and, but you guys also show up here the next day.
Yeah.
For WTF Gym Talk, I get hit by a car. That's done. It's done instant. Like, you and me have created high paying jobs. Mm-hmm. Businesses operate our own. Do you have any, besides, and again, even course selling, like we said, people are like, well, I've got courses and I'm like, yeah, but you're going to, someone would have to refresh those every period of time.
Exactly.
And someone has to keep making it relevant. So if you die, eventually that course goes stale and your students unenroll. Do you have plans or do you ever think about that as a scalable thing? Like, if you want to have, start a family one day and the time is going to be completely sucked out of you instantly, how do you think about scaling that into more of a business? Or is it like, I think this, and again, there's nothing wrong with jobs. Lawyers have jobs.
Yeah.
You know, fucking doctors are paid hour. Like, these are things that, you know, you, if the doctor dies, he stops making money, you know, like, but it's a well-paid thing. How do you think about that going forward with scaling?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. I really like the idea of staying small, which sounds kind of weird, but I like having only a small amount of people that I work with so that I can be really one-on-one with people. But yeah, I mean, my business, if I died, would die with me.
Yeah.
I would say like in the next 5 years, if, you know, if I did want to clock in less hours, I would probably, I have a team member now who she does a lot of work for me and she is just getting in the process of kind of learning everything that I know and getting into the process of researching the way I research and all of that. So I would probably have her take over. But also it's very hard because I don't know if you guys are like this, but I am like type A control freak. So I would have a very hard time letting her take all of my people and just be like, okay, I just trust you to do, even if I taught her every single thing, I would still have such a hard time with it.
And you might, and there is also a fear of, am I creating a future competitor?
That's a great point.
Am I giving someone free education? I'm literally taking them through the Bisquette school to, and then learning you're going to go ahead and start off their own thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if worse came to worse, I would probably just do my Instagram and not coach. And the reason for that, it just takes me so much less time and it brings in a lot more money. So
yeah, it's interesting. I was talking with someone, a similar influencer, infopreneur world, and like the main exit from job to business has to be in like coming up with your own proprietary way to do the thing.
Yeah.
And I think everyone in your line of work, we all have like a unique way we do it. And it's, can you really like, can you put some branding around it? Can you think of it? Can you fucking eventually get a book, like do a book? Like, can you like make it a thing?
Right.
Because it's really the only exit out of this entire thing from a job to a business. Because at some point, you know, it's just like in the fitness industry, you don't see a lot of 62-year-old coaches. You age out.
Fair, yes.
You, as an influencer, you know.
There's also not a lot of 60-something-year-old influencers.
Correct, but right. I think it could be more of, because that generation, if you're 60-some, you didn't grow up with this shit.
That's a very good point.
So there was a lot of 60-some-year-old people on TV still.
Yeah.
You know, fucking, you know, Walter Cronkite, like all these names, those, because they grew up with it.
Exactly.
I think we might see more on the social media side because they grew up with it. But yeah, I'm always really curious when I talk with other people who have created really dope jobs.
Yeah.
But then you feel the angst of the job when you want to go on vacation. Because you mentioned, you had said something earlier, like, you know, I wanted to do somewhere, you know, I'm constantly having to still work for other people.
Yeah.
Even when you have like what we do, you're still fucking technically working for other people at the end of the day. But what's next? Like, what's kind of the next project? What do you work on? Or is it kind of just, I mean, I know you've got the wedding and all that you're planning and you've been doing a lot of fun things outside in your backyard with flamingos and fucking tree stuff and like float, like all that cool. What is next or what's on the horizon?
I, I get asked this question pretty frequently, and I never really have an answer. I will say in my whole career, I've probably never really planned for the future, which sounds horrible. but honestly, I'm really happy where I am now. I feel like I'm making the amount of money that I want to make, and I have so much free time, and I love my job. So like, if I had to do this for the rest of my life, I'd be so fine with it.
I love it. So I
really don't exactly have a five-year plan, but I'm so fine with it.
That's perfect.
We're just going to roll with the punches and see what happens.
I love it. Now, if anyone's listening to this and they'd like to get in touch with you, they're curious about either get, you know, they just want to learn more or possibly get started with their own thing, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Instagram, probably. That would be a good option. My handle is KBOUSQ. KBOUSQ. And then your social mate, it's soulshulmate, S-O-U-L. Showmate.
We'll link it up. We'll link it up in the show notes. We'll put in the show notes. For sure. Kristen, thank you so much for coming today. It was awesome chatting with you.
Thank you guys for having me.